Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The Supreme Court. A theory, I'm told, at the Supreme Court that dominates the conversation generation after generation is stare decisis, meaning we don't want to mess with what we've decided before, even though Richard Epstein, Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, is here to help me through this. I did not go to law school. Professor teaches law school and has for many decades. And here we come to stare decisis and the question of, at the moment, Roe v. Wade. Because the Supreme Court, having heard arguments, oral arguments, about Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization, will now find a way to deal with the stare decisis of Roe v. Wade, 1973. In addition, Planned Parenthood v. Casey, 1992, stare decisis. Richard, a very good evening to you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. As I understand it, stare decisis is a dominant institution, except when it isn't. So that's what I want to explore here. Let's begin with the famous outrage by the Supreme Court a little more than 100 years ago. 1905 is my memory. Plessy versus Ferguson. And we'll add
1896.
Thank you. 1896. We'll add in one more, Korematsu, which was the internment camps decision by the court in the 1940s. Those were precedents. How were they dealt with by subsequent courts? Good evening to you.
Yes. Well, first of all, on the definition, stare decisis means quite literally let the decision stand. And the idea is that if every time you get a new case, you can undo the old case, there's no continuity in the law. And so therefore, there's a strong presumption, but not an absolute presumption, that these decisions survive. And then the question is, when do you start to create exceptions to this? And first thing you have to ask yourself, is there now a kind of a general consensus that some earlier decision is grievously wrong? And that was certainly the case with Plessy as you started to move through the period. It was absolutely a rock solid precedent for the first 20 years or so. That is to the middle of the First World War. And then slowly people began to chip away at it in one way or another. And then the final coup de grace was in 1954, when it was not explicitly overruled, but it was put into the dustbin of history and has never been heard from again as an authority to which you would cite. Korematsu had a somewhat different history. This had to do with the internment camps. This was not done by the kind of unrespectable people that you associate with Plessy. This was in the Roosevelt administration. Earl Warren was behind the kind of decision that was actually upheld in this case. Herbert Wexler, famous criminal law president, was on it. And it was decided by Justice Black. And what it decided, essentially, it was okay to put these people into internment camps. By 1944, they were let out. And by 1988, compensation was given to the people who had been interned to the extent that they were still alive. And then just a couple of years ago, John Roberts said, I've had enough of this case. It is hereby overruled. But there was no fight with respect to that one because there was nobody who wished to defend it. So what he did was kind of a footnote. Roe is a very different kind of case. There are many people, myself included, who believe it's an intellectual jumble of the First Order. Harry Blackmun had all sorts of influences on it, but the opinion itself doesn't seem to make any kind of sense. That at the time that it came down, it was widely ridiculed as a judicial document. And then over time, what's happened is the outcome has been pleasing to many, many people. So what you do is you get a strong contingent of people who are fiercely defensive of Roe, and they find it very uncomfortable given its sort of dubious intellectual origins. And so now the conversation starts to go to a kind of prescription. It's been around for a long time. Don't you dare upset this kind of a case because there'll be too much disorder. And then you start watching the way people write. And on some hand, there are people who say, you know what? This president is so terrible. The quicker we put it into a deadbeat basket, the happier we'll be. There are other people who said, you shatter this thing by judicial overruling. The entire forces of confusion and disorder and disarray will come next. there. What's the frightening about this is that the disagreement that you see on the stare decisis point is every bit as great as the disagreement that you start to see on the merits of the original decision.
The understanding I have right now is that stare decisis is an important thing that must be acknowledged in any subsequent case. Now, the question here is, we're talking about a long period of time. We could go back to Dred Scott or earlier. Are there schools that speak of these things outside of the court? Are there theories that dominate what is to be done with stare decisis? Because sometimes I think they just make it up at the moment that they decide to reform or adjust the previous decision. Is there one protocol that has been followed consistently?
Absolutely not. I mean, and in fact, one of the things that happens is you have 9 independent minds on the Supreme Court, and none of them is prepared to yield to the other 8 minds when it comes to the question of whether or not we form a uniform approach. So, for example, you take somebody like Justice Thomas. He's very principled on this. He said, my loyalty is not the previous cases if they're wrong. My loyalty is to the original document, and when I see a cleavage, I'm always going to favor the first rather than the second. And then there are other people who are institutionalists who stress the view that continuity is important, that gradual change is appropriate, that chipping away is better than trying to topple this. There was a piece in the Wall Street Journal this morning by Richard Rhee who took exactly that position. There was a piece the other day in the New York Times by Charles Free, who himself at one time had been a judge and was Solicitor General. And he says, I've changed my mind about Roe. I think it's a big mistake for us to try to topple this thing in some kind of a giant coup. You read people like Ed Whalen and so forth. He says, let me give you 16 different reasons why stare decisis cannot be allowed to defend this abomination of an opinion. So you're not going to get any more consensus on stare decisis than you're going to get with respect to the underlying decision, which is why this thing is such a brawl. And, you know, my attitude, as you know, John, over the years has been very equivocal. When I was a young cub writing in 1973, I did write an article on Roe v. Wade, and I said, look, this thing is just plain wrong as a matter of principle. There was a long question about its relationship to a famous case in 1905 called Lochner against New York. Lochner against New York has been sort of overruled. It's absolutely damned as one of the worst decisions ever. And I regard that as a bum rap. It was a case that essentially said that the state can't tell you how long you're able to work. And they can't punish an employer if the worker and the employer agree. I thought that was a pretty strong set of decisions, hardly something insidious in terms of what happened. If you repealed Lochner or the 10-hour work week, nobody would ever say, oh, my God, you can't do this. If somebody just said, oh, you know, we really want to institutionalize what they did in Korematsu and we're going to have everybody be put into internment camps when we think it's appropriate, people would go crazy. So Lochner and Roe were actually the comparisons that were made back in the 1960s and 70s when this issue was come forward. And Roe is a much stronger case for government intervention because you have the status of the fetus, the embryo, whatever you wish to call it, to put into the equation. And health and safety have always been justifications for limiting freedom of contract. The arguments for health were very weak, I think, or at least arguably weak in the Lochner case. They're much stronger here. And so you had this huge battle going on. Why is it that we now suddenly assert fundamental rights against the legislatures when we're dealing with abortion and we don't do it when we're dealing with economic liberties? So the tensions have been there from the very, very beginning. And what it is there's no agreement, no consensus across the population at large. And what's happened in this particular case, if you listen to the Supreme Court argument, it's clear that the liberal judges, particularly Justice Sotomayor, overplayed their hand. What they did is got much too personal, much too quickly, saying the only reason this is going to change is because we have a change in the personnel of the court. Well, everybody kind of knows that, but her subtext is these people are unprincipled, whereas I am not. And that's not the kind of thing you want to be saying to your colleagues if you hope to persuade them when you're sitting on the court. So I think all observers, pretty much regardless of their view, believe that the chances of keeping Roe intact were smaller after the argument than they were before because of the sort of the exuberance, the wrong exuberance that existed on the left. There are three judges only. Sotomayor just went on in a kind of nasty fashion. Justice Breyer, he was a perfect gentleman, but he sort of wandered around for a very long period of time. And Justice Kagan was, I think, a little bit more shrewd and didn't push quite hard as the other two did. But if you then look at the three of them and see the overwhelming impression, everybody, liberal and conservative, came out with the same view. They overshot their hand. It looks as though the conservatives will come together. The consequence of being so vituperative on the whole issue may well have been to put Justice Roberts, the Chief Justice, who's always an accommodator, kind of trying to find the middle way. They may have pushed him further to the right rather than pushing him to the left.
I want to talk about gradualism and Justice Roberts when we come back, Richard, because we've seen Justice Roberts move on that story before, most notably during the decision of Obamacare during 2012's campaign. I'm speaking with Professor Richard Epstein about the giant institution of stare decisis. What's happened before should not be overruled, goes the opinion. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Chances are, you've been to the doctor recently, and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your Social Security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info. And if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slipcovers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange any time. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at WashableSofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.